We are back on the County Grapevine for Wednesday, July 1st, and I'm your host, Dave Wheatley. It's time for the County Naturally. Here's Pamela.
Welcome to the County Naturally. I'm Pamela Stagg. Today, coffee versus climate change.
I think we have to start thinking very broadly and very ambitiously if we're going to save coffee.
I love to start my morning with a nice cup of coffee, and I'm not alone. More than 2 billion cups of coffee are drunk around the world every day. And coffee supports 100 million people around the world, mostly small growers. But with climate change, coffee could be in trouble. Here to tell us about it is one of the world's experts on climate change and coffee, Dr. Aaron Davis. He's the senior research leader of crops and global change at Royal Botanic Gardens Kew, which is just outside London, England. Welcome to the program, Aaron.
Hello, Pamela.
Aaron, a lot of people know Royal Botanic Gardens Kew as a wonderful public garden. They may know that you're growing over 40,000 species of living plants, but not many people know about Kew as a research institution.
You're absolutely right. The public perception is of a lovely botanic garden, somewhere nice to visit and take the family, have a picnic. But first and foremost, Kew is a scientific institute. We have a science staff of around 500. And we've been doing botanical, horticultural and crop research since the 18th century, particularly from around 1850 onwards. Kew has been a scientific institute first and foremost.
And now to coffee. Let's start with the world's most popular coffee, Arabica. It accounts for 60% of the world's coffee production. But it's a bit of a prima donna when it comes to heat.
Yes, Pamela, it is rather sensitive. It likes a mean annual temperature range of between 18 degrees to 22 degrees Celsius. Of course, that's the mean temperature. It will take up to around 30 degrees Celsius. And in fact, at night, will survive temperatures almost down to freezing. In a way, it's quite robust, but it is overall quite a sensitive plant when it comes to its climate requirements. So what we say is that it's a species that likes cool tropical climates.
You've done some climate modeling studies to see what happens to coffee in a warmer world. What did those studies show?
Yes, we have done a number of climate change studies for Arabica coffee, mostly in East Africa. And generally they show a worsening suitability as the world warms. But I would say there are over 200 climate change studies for coffee, and they all show a similar worrying picture that the climate is not going to become more suitable for coffee. In fact, it's likely in many cases to become an awful lot worse.
One fallback could be that other commercial coffee, Robusta. It's fine with hotter temperatures, but the big question is how we feel about Robusta. Do we really love Robusta?
Yeah, that's a great question. A very topical at the moment because Robusta prices are at a 30-year high. And people are looking at Robusta as a sort of alternative to Arabica. And the world wants Robusta. It uses Robusta in instant coffee and in espresso blends. So there is a strong demand. But in terms of its what we call the cup quality or flavor profile, it's really no match for Arabica. It doesn't have those qualities that we're really looking for in an excellent cup of coffee. Some people like Robusta, and I think many would rather drink Robusta than no coffee at all, but it certainly doesn't have that particular quality we're looking for in a really good cup of coffee. Secondly, there's a lot of misconception that Robusta will be available to replace Arabica in a changed climate, but that's just not the case. So whereas Robusta is more temperature tolerant than Arabica, it likes a lot of rainfall. And in a changing world, it's not just about an increase in temperatures. It's about rainfall, how much rainfall we get and when it falls. Rainfall and temperature are very tightly linked. And the idea that we can replace Robusta with Arabica if we wanted to is, I think, ill-judged because the two have quite different climate requirements. In most cases, you can't replace one with the other.
So what I'm hearing is that we have to figure out a way to save Arabica or find a plan B.
Yes, I think we have to. I think we have to start thinking very broadly and very ambitiously if we're going to save coffee. There are a number of options for doing this. And first and foremost, I think we should be trying to save Arabica and Robusta because, of course, many millions of farmers are relying on this crop for their livelihoods. But there are other options that we should really be looking into if we really want a robust adaptation plan for coffee production.
Next, coffee production plan B. County Naturally, and I'm Pamela Stagg. Today, Dr. Aaron Davis is on the line from Royal Botanic Gardens Kew, just outside London, England. Aaron, a number of temperature-sensitive tropical bird and plant species are moving up mountains in search of cooler temperatures. Is that something that might work for coffee growers?
Absolutely. That was one of the major outcomes of a study we did in 2017. Is that in some countries, such as Ethiopia, you can move coffee upwards in elevation, up the mountainside, and there you'll find not only cooler, but in many cases, wetter conditions. Every 100 meters you've moved up in elevation, you drop about a degree Celsius in temperature. That's a very simplistic overview, but it does hold promise for those countries that do have higher land available. But there are some serious caveats to that because farmers can't move because there's probably a farmer growing some other crop 100, 200, 300 meters higher up the mountainside. There may be a forest, there may be a conservation area or national park. The soil may not be suitable. But I think above all, what you really want to avoid is human migration because that causes all sorts of really acute social issues.
The other option, and one favored by bird lovers everywhere, is growing coffee under the shade of other trees. Aaron, there seem to be a number of benefits to shade-grown coffee, in addition to providing a better habitat for birds.
Yes, indeed, that's very true. There are a number of real advantages to moving from a sun coffee production system, i.e. with no shade, to one under some sort of shade tree cover. There are some complications, of course, in that pathway. And for example, a lot of the world's coffee is already grown under shade. So if you're already growing under shade, you won't reduce your ambient air temperatures. For some coffees like Robusta, it's not very suitable. Yields decline quite substantially. And in fact, where farmers have moved from Arabica shade systems to growing Robusta, they're finding they have to remove shade to grow Robusta. In terms of advantages, of course, you're going to be reducing the air temperature. You're going to be benefiting the soil and the microbes and fungi and everything else that is in that soil. You're going to be improving biodiversity. You're going to be capturing carbon. So there are lots of advantages. So I think if farmers can profitably move to a shade production system, that may work for some time. It's not a long-term solution because those trees that you're using to shade your coffee might be influenced by climate change themselves. And again, it's not just about temperature. It's also about the availability of rainfall, water in the soil, which is absolutely essential for healthy coffee.
Aaron, commercial coffee growers focus on two coffee species, Arabica and Robusta. How many other coffee species are there out there?
That's been a major thrust of work we've been doing over the last 20-odd years to actually understand the species diversity in coffee. When I started way back in the 20th century, we had about 80 species of coffee, and now we have 130. And I think it won't be too long before there's 140. That provides plant breeders, coffee researchers with a lot of diversity to work with to develop the coffee crop.
Next, in search of a lost coffee. I'm Pamela Stagg, and this is the County Naturally. Today, one of the world's experts on climate change and crops, Dr. Aaron Davis, is on the line from outside London, England. Aaron, a report by a Scottish botanist written in 1834 started you on a trek to find a lost coffee species. You went to Sierra Leone to look for that coffee species, Coffea stenophylla, which doesn't have an English name. Why did Coffea stenophylla catch your attention?
First and foremost, it was said to have an amazing flavor. which is what coffee's about. We all want a nice tasting cup of coffee. And in some reports, people said it was better than Arabica. So that stimulates interest. And the other reason, of course, is that it occurs in very hot seasonal locations in West Africa, quite different to Arabica, and even quite different to the Robusta. So not only does it have the qualities that you're really looking for in a good cup of coffee, the idea early on was that maybe it could have some really important climate resiliency attributes, i.e. that it can withstand much higher temperatures than Arabica coffee.
Were you able to find Coffea stenophylla 200 years after the report?
Well, it took a long time because I was interested in this species at least 15 years ago. But Sierra Leone and Ivory Coast, where it also grows, was very inaccessible for many years, firstly because of civil war. And then when the civil war ended, we had the Ebola crisis. Finally, we had the opportunity to visit Sierra Leone at the end of 2018 with two colleagues, Jeremy Hagar and Daniel Samu. And after quite some searching, we eventually found one plant of stenophylla coffee. And then after that, in another location, we found many more plants.
Aaron, you did a blind taste test to compare our familiar Arabica coffee from Brazil with Coffea stenophylla that you found in Sierra Leone. How did the newly found coffee stack up against our old favorite?
At the end of 2018, we found stenophylla in the wild with no fruits, so we couldn't taste the coffee. Then we were able to take a small amount of coffee collected directly from the wild, actually collected off the forest floor, just 10 grams, a very small amount. And that came to the UK in 2020. Of course, COVID got in the way of all this. And we took the coffee to a roaster in East London, Union Coffee. It was roasted. Before we tasted it, Jeremy and I and the people at Union Coffee said, look, if this tastes okay, that'll satisfy our requirements. But it was amazing because it tasted more than okay. It was a fantastic experience. And the very strange thing for all of us is it tasted like Arabica coffee. Indistinguishable, I would say. That rips up the rule book for understanding coffee chemistry and flavor, the influence of the environment on coffee. Because here was a coffee from the lowlands of West Africa, very high temperatures, almost 7 degrees warmer than where Arabica grows, yet it had an Arabica taste. And that's what made it so exciting.
There's another coffee species, Excelsa.
Yes, Excelsa fills us full of confidence that we've developed the coffee crop quite quickly. So here's a coffee that doesn't taste as good as stenophylla or as Arabica, but one of the disadvantages of stenophylla is that the yield is very low. Excelsa produces a coffee that's somewhere in between Robusta and Arabica, but is very high yielding, very drought tolerant, very strong, easy to grow, pest and disease resistant in many cases. And it's already been grown at scale in some parts of Africa, interestingly, in response to climate change. So what we're finding is that in Uganda, there are farmers who have been growing Robusta for decades, if not centuries, who were shifting to Excelsa coffee because in their perception, the climate had changed and changed to the extent where they were no longer able to grow Robusta commercially.
What I'm hearing is that if you could maybe cross those two, you might end up with a hybrid that actually could work to replace Arabica.
Yes. One of the things we said way back in 2019 is that stenophylla coffee would fulfill the requirements of the niche coffee market for people who really want something different or want to experience a new exciting coffee that they've never tasted before, but that has a limited lifespan. The curiosity value fades away and these things have to be commercial. And what we said back in 2019 is the real use of stenophylla coffee would be breeding with other species. When you're breeding, you need a certain number of positive traits. With stenophylla, you have the great taste and the heat and some drought tolerance. So you're bringing into the breeding mix very useful characteristics, which really didn't exist or wouldn't exist if we didn't have stenophylla coffee.
I know you're working on a confidential program to create some of those new hybrids. Are you feeling optimistic that you can develop a new heat-tolerant coffee?
Yes, it's not just our team. We're connected with researchers in many countries that have the similar idea and are following similar pathways. And there are other farmers in India and South Sudan and Indonesia that are growing Excelsa. It's sort of a burgeoning movement, if you like. Am I confident that we can find a climate-resilient coffee? Yes, I am. I think if we can keep the momentum going with plant development and plant breeding in coffee, then I think we can. But what I would say is that there's a limit. You can't just carry on developing coffee crops or any crops for that matter that are infinitely resistant to increasing temperatures and low rainfalls. We need to do something about carbon. We need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. There has to be a balance between meaningful mitigation, the reduction of greenhouse gases, as well as crop development. And that's not just coffee, of course, it's all crops. So it's a combination of both. If we can do both, yeah, I'm optimistic.
I get the feeling we have to do both.
Absolutely, because even if we were successful in mitigation, the Earth's not going to stop warming. So we're still going to have to keep developing new crop species. We can go on breeding, but unless we do something about the mitigation, all our work will be worthless.
Aaron, I have to ask you, what is your favorite so far of all the coffee species and hybrids that you've tasted?
I'm still a massive fan of Arabica. I still think it's the superstar of the coffee world. I mean, I tasted an Arabica today, which was just incredible for Costa Rica. But I'm also a big fan of Excelsa. I've been drinking a lot of Excelsa for the last 2 years. It's a different coffee experience. But for me, it's like wine. I mean, why would you always want to drink the same wine? So it's nice to mix it up, I think. So sometimes I'll have Excelsa, sometimes I'll have Arabica. And if I've got a bit of spare cash, I'll buy some Eugenioides, which is another wild minor species, which has an amazing flavor. I'm not a big fan of Robusta. I'm also really been very surprised with Liberica coffee, which is similar to Excelsa. Very fruity, very rich tropical flavor notes like mango and lychee and bananas and jackfruit. It's a real powerhouse of strong tropical fruit flavors. I'm interested in diversity, botanical and in the coffee and the foods that I like to eat and drink. It's about experiencing different flavors. That diversity makes life exciting. But we wouldn't have any of those opportunities if we didn't have the wild diversity. But we have to preserve those essential wild resources, which is where all our food and drink comes from, of course. As we said with Stenophylla, I think if we had waited 10 years, Stenophylla might be extinct. We would have lost that opportunity to use it in coffee development.
Aaron, thanks so much for joining me today.
Pamela, you're very welcome.
I've been talking to Dr. Aaron Davis, one of the world's experts on coffee and climate change. He's the senior research leader of crops and global change at Royal Botanic Gardens Kew, just outside London, England. He joined me by phone from Kew. And that's the program for today. Pamela Stagg, thanks for joining me on The County Naturally. See you next week.
Thank you so much, Dr. Davis and Pamela. Next, I'll let you know what's coming up later this week on The County Grapevine.